Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Monday, the 26th of July, 2021. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services Friday reported Petersburg's second COVID-19 death of the pandemic. The death was recent, a Petersburg man in his 70s, and one of two reported by the state on Friday. In total, there have been deaths for 377 Alaskans from the start of the pandemic. Petersburg's first was back in March of 2020. Health professionals are urging anyone with symptoms of COVID-19 to get tested as soon as possible as case numbers increase across the state. Petersburg saw its active case count hit 13 a week ago, and that dropped to 8 active cases by the end of last week. But doctors say the spread of the more transmissible Delta variant is driving up numbers around the nation. The number of Alaskans hospitalized with COVID-19 is also increasing, state health officials say. Statewide, the overall number of cases increased for the fifth week in a row. Petersburg's hospital is seeing people come to the emergency room with more severe complications and some people being medevaced out of town for more advanced care. On a radio show Friday, Petersburg Medical Center physician Dr. Selena Burt explained the latest round of cases have been more serious.
It seems like people can get sicker more quickly with Delta. So you can seem like you're doing okay for a day or two, and then all of a sudden get worse. We also have had to send more people out with this latest round than we have in the past, it seems like. And even people who have been immunized are getting sick. For the most part, they're not as sick as people who haven't been immunized.
Bird also called on the community to take voluntary precautions to slow the spread of the coronavirus.
So we really want people to be cautious, maybe even think about going back to using masks when you go to the grocery store or to the post office. Do the things that you can do to protect yourself from getting sick. And it has a domino effect to help the entire community, the entire state, the entire nation.
Burt says the Delta variant can also have more mild symptoms similar to the common cold, with some reporting a sore throat and no fever. Doctors say they have more options if the illness is diagnosed early. If patients wait 5 days or more after symptoms show, that can put them at greater risk for more serious complications. Dr. Coleman Cutchins is a pharmacist and a COVID testing coordinator for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Anybody with any symptoms, regardless of vaccine status, it's important to get tested. You know, the treatment options that we do have for COVID, the best ones are a class of drug called monoclonal antibodies. Those work best if given early. So the best time to get those drugs and the best time to give them the best chance of working is to do it as soon as you start to get mild symptoms and as soon as you test positive. From there, the longer you wait, the less likely that treatment's going to be effective.
The medical center urges people to stay away from others if you do have symptoms and call to arrange a test. Again, the phone number to call to get tested or to find out about symptoms or vaccine is 772-5788. A wave of infections in the small Prince William Sound community of Cordova has temporarily shut down a seafood processing plant, and it led to a mask mandate for workers in that city. City manager Helen Howarth says the virus took hold in Cordova and spread fast, infecting residents as well as dozens of workers at Cam2's Alaska Wild Seafoods.
So COVID got brought into our community by a resident, and that resident wasn't as careful in their interactions with other community members, and pretty soon we had an outbreak on our hands.
It's the worst outbreak for Cordova during the pandemic. Howarth says that city believes it did not begin at Alaska Wild Seafoods, but staff there contracted it in the community, and then it spread.
And it spread like wildfire. It was not something that we could contain quickly, even identify quickly. So all of a sudden we had 70-plus cases, and the numbers were going up and fast.
The COVID spike in Cordova comes as much of Alaska also experiences a sharp rise, including in Southeast, where Sitka's in the middle of its worst outbreak of the pandemic yet. Health officials say the latest wave of infections is mostly driven by the Delta variant infecting unvaccinated people. In Cordova, Howarth says the outbreak is mostly, almost exclusively on among people who've chosen not to get vaccinated or not get fully vaccinated. She says while many of the seafood processors in that town require all their workers to have a shot, Alaska Wild Seafoods just strongly encourages it.
There were members of their plant, staff members, who were unvaccinated, and that's the problem. We have several seafood processes here that are requiring vaccination, 100% vaccination, and they are not having problems.
Alaska Wild Seafoods did not respond to requests for comment Friday, but the CEO told the Anchorage Daily News 35 of that plant's 45 employees are fully vaccinated, and just one worker who tested positive sought medical care. That company temporarily shut down as employees were in isolation and quarantine, forcing it to skip the fishing opener last week. The first large cruise ship to dock in Juneau since 2019 arrived Friday morning. Juneau residents have mixed feelings about that ship's arrival amid an uptick in COVID cases. But as Bridget Dowd reports, for the most part, the feeling at the dock and in downtown businesses Friday was one of hope.
Yeah, I see some people rolling in with the cameras and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Royal Caribbean Serenade of the Seas arrived around 7 a.m., carrying less than 650 guests and a little more than 800 crew members. In a non-pandemic era, the vessel has room for more than 2,400 passengers, but it's traveling at a reduced capacity. Russ and Casey Radigan walked off the ship around 10 a.m. Traveling from Columbus, Ohio, this was their first time in Alaska and a long-awaited trip.
We planned this Alaska cruise like 2 years ago before the pandemic happened. And it kept on getting canceled and canceled. And this was the first Alaska cruise opportunity that we had. So we decided to take it.
The Radigans were on their way to see the Mendenhall Glacier, and they've already been on several whale watches and other wildlife excursions.
We saw a number of whales, a number of seals, and a number of otters. And, you know, we thought maybe we'd see one or two. And I think they were waiting for us.
Jeremy Schrader was also aboard the Serenade of the Seas. He says despite the circumstances, he felt very safe aboard the ship and comfortable with the COVID-19 protocols that were put in place.
Most people are vaccinated. Obviously, the young ones aren't. But and I've been pleasantly surprised by everybody still wearing their masks, even though we all are all vaccinated still. So it's been good.
Do you have any plans while you're in Juneau?
Yeah, we're planning to take a helicopter tour out to the glacier if the weather holds.
Of course, with those safety protocols came a much quieter scene at the dock. People were just slowly trickling off the ship, and the booths offering whale watches and other tours were less than half full. Greg Pilcher was manning one of the booths for M&M Tours.
It's pretty slow. Yeah, there's like not a whole lot of people on the ship. But I'd say I think we did better than expected. You know, like we wrote a couple tickets, which was great. I think we just wanted to get out here and like practice and remember how to do everything. And it just feels really good that there are people here again, because it's been like a long 2 years, for sure.
Down the street, the Red Dog Saloon had just opened for the day, and the employees weren't wearing their usual street clothes.
This is my first day wearing the corset and the fun dress.
That's waitress Emily Lang, who says the Red Dog is a different restaurant when the cruise ships come to town.
It's more about the showmanship when the tourists come in. So we put on this get-up, and we'll have live music, and we'll all sing along. I'm just excited for being busy all the time.
Some cruise passengers made their way to the gift shops downtown, like the Bear's Lair, where employee Casa Corpola said she'd already made some sales.
There's been a few customers coming through, and I really, really appreciate that they're mostly masked up. I think they got the word on the boat that it was respectful to do that, and most of them have been very respectful. And if they're not masked, they ask if they should be.
She says the passengers seemed excited to be there, and most were just wandering around before going on tours later in the day. Corpola says she's glad to see travelers in the store again.
But I'm glad that it's starting slowly, because I wouldn't want to see like five boats in the harbor all at once. But this is a good introduction to, I've worked in this business for about 4 or 5 years now. So sometimes it can be pretty hectic, but today has been pretty pretty easy to handle.
After Juno, the Serenade of the Seas was scheduled to dock in Ketchikan before stopping in Sitka for a second time on Wednesday, where another ship will also be in port. In Juno, I'm Bridget Dowd.
Kensington Mine is running out of room to store its tailings. The U.S. Forest Service recently approved a plan to expand the gold mine. That's about 45 miles northwest of Juneau. But federal scientists have urged alternatives to stockpiling millions of tons of liquid mine waste they say pose a long-term threat to fisheries around Berners Bay. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
The mine produces gold concentrate, so all that leftover rock has to go somewhere, and the mining company says it'll be out of space in a few years. The way Kensington disposes its mine waste makes it somewhat unique in this country. Thanks to a favorable decision in 2009 by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Chicago-based mine company was allowed to convert a natural lake into a tailings pond. There's an 88-foot dam in place now to hold back about 4 million tons of liquid mine waste that contains heavy metals from the ore. This tailing treatment facility, formerly known as Lower Slate Lake, lies upstream from Berners Bay, which makes conservationists and some federal regulators nervous should it ever fail. NOAA scientist Sean Egan has helped write letters to the Forest Service raising his agency's concerns.
When you raise a dam by 36 feet and add another 4 million cubic yards of material, the chance of that dam failing increases. And should it increase, the tailings will spill out more broadly into Berners Bay.
The U.S. Forest Service recently greenlit the mine's expansion, and that would increase the tailing treatment facility's capacity to 8.5 million tons of liquid tailings. It's working through the environmental review to get its permits, and federal law required the Forest Service to consult with NOAA fisheries scientists. The Forest Service declined an interview request, but it released a statement saying Kensington's mining operations plan must produce water quality and aquatic habitats by minimizing erosion and preventing tailings or waste from contaminating water bodies or other areas. Now, NOAA Fisheries' role is advisory, but it's asked the Forest Service to consider alternatives. It says Kensington should instead filter out the water from its tailings so they'd be stored in a more solid form. NOAA Fisheries' Molly Zaleski says filtered tailings are already being done in the region's other major mine.
And that's something that we already have at Greens Creek Mine, so we knew that that's something that can be done in Southeast Alaska.
Kensington's engineers and consultants say they looked into it.
Just because it works at one operation in one area in Southeast Alaska doesn't mean it's going to work in another.
Mark Kiesling is the mine's general manager in Juneau.
That amount of precipitation and the amount of snowfall we get basically makes it difficult to handle filtered tailings. The whole concept behind filtered tailings is you remove the water from the tailings, and that allows you to stack it up. And if you add the water back in precipitation, it makes it almost impossible to stack it up. And you can see where that might create a bit of a muddy, soupy mess.
It's not a direction the Forest Service is pushing for either. And that was laid out in its July record of decision, which gave provisional support to raising the dam to a total height of 124 feet, easily the largest tailings dam in Southeast Alaska. The Forest Service's own analysis has suggested that whether Kensington's mine waste is liquid or solid, it presents an equal danger, which it characterized as very low risk. But those in the know say that's oversimplification.
The failure mechanisms on those two different structures would be different, so the probabilities of those failures would be different.
That's Charlie Cobb, head of Alaska's Dam Safety Program. In his technical comments to the Forest Service, he says equating risks as basically equal doesn't measure up.
And the consequences of those failures would be different. So rather than being subjective about it, it would be better, at least if they had some relative comparison that said one might be higher or lower, or the consequences might be different.
To be clear, none of the federal agencies are suggesting Kensington Mine's dam is an immediate threat to Lynn Canal. Here's NOAA Fisheries' Sean Egan again.
We do not feel that this dam is likely to fail in the next 10 years while the mine is operating. We're not even suggesting the next 20 years or 30 years. It's more a process of the dam will be there for a very, very long time.
Engineers are like lawyers. They don't like to toss around words like forever or perpetuity. Cobb says a dam's service life depends on its maintenance and care.
It's not that you can't design for something for a very long time frame. but you do have to provide for the resources necessary to inspect and monitor that dam and do maintenance on it for an indefinite period of time.
The expansion plan has generated a lot of interest. More than 400 comment letters from Alaskans and organizations expressing a mixture of support as an economic engine or as an ecological threat. A formal objection period expires August 23rd, but barring a major challenge, the Forest Service's decision becomes binding and Kensington will be able to expand its operations and stay in business through at least 2033. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaskans will soon have a chance to weigh in with what changes to state taxes, services, or permanent fund dividends they'd like to see in the long term. A working group of legislators has been meeting to consider ways to close the gap between what the state spends and what it brings in. The group plans to hear public testimony over 4 days beginning this week. First round of that will be in Anchorage this Thursday, the 29th, the second in the Mat-Su Borough on the 30th, the third in Fairbanks on the 31st, and the last in Juneau, August 2nd. Residents who can't attend the hearings can call in to provide a testimony on that August 2nd date. Specific locations for the hearings are still being finalized. As part of a deal that prevented a state government shutdown, the House agreed to launch the working group. Its goal is to recommend changes for the next special session. That's scheduled to start up August 2nd, the last day of that public testimony. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.